Welcome to the AI and Data-Driven Leadership Podcast, the show where we spotlight the innovators and leaders who are transforming the future using the power of data and AI. I'm your host, Dean Gaeta, author, podcaster, and founder and CEO of Infogistics and Slingshot. We're living in an exciting era, a time where builders, leaders, and entrepreneurs are using data and AI to fuel unprecedented growth, create groundbreaking products, and drive meaningful transformations in their industry. If you're ready to learn from some of the brightest minds and uncover actionable insight to take your business to the next level, you're in the right place. And if you have a story to share, stick around until the end of the show. We'll tell you how you can become our next guest and inspire leaders around the globe. Welcome to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast. Let's dive in. Okay, I have the pleasure today of talking with Dan Belkowski from Product Tranquility. And so we just had a little bit of a pregame here, and it's very interesting, a lot to share today about AI and how he's using it in his work. And then it's interesting as well, Dan, how you help tech companies with pricing. But maybe just kick it off, just like a little introduction of yourself, and then we can get into a good conversation.
Yeah, good to be chatting with you again, Dean. For listeners who are not aware, Dean came on my podcast, Ask Scaling Secrets, not too long ago. This good, nice interview swap. Happy to have it be on the other side of the mic this time. But yeah, I've been in the software world for my entire career, over two decades at this point, and started out as a software engineer, and that may come up in our conversation as we get into how I'm using AI today, but quickly realized that day in, day out, being a software developer was not for me, because no matter how angry I got, the computer didn't care if my code was wrong, it still wouldn't run it. It did not respond to my emotions as I had hoped. But no, I eventually became much more interested in what products should we build, and why do customers value this and don't just go do it on their own? And then why do they pay us, and why do they pay us what they pay us, and why not pay us more or less than that? And so I got really fascinated by all those topics. Eventually that led me into a career in product management and an MBA. And I spent the last 6 years building Product Tranquility, which now I spend all my time helping B2B SaaS CEOs with pricing and packaging.
Awesome. I think that you're doing some interesting work around how you are leveraging AI in your work. Could you share some of the things that you've learned and what works and being more productive in leveraging AI?
Yeah, so this is a far-reaching topic, and there's many directions we could go. I think the first thing is that, as I mentioned in my intro, I do have a podcast called SaaS Scaling Secrets. And Dean, I know this is new for you, you may not realize this yet, but running a podcast is an incredible amount of work. There's a lot of flows from finding the guests to scheduling the guests to doing the editing, the production, the promotion, the follow-up, et cetera, et cetera. I am a solopreneur, and I am trying to figure out, okay, how can I make a lot of these things scalable? And the default position for time immemorial was I go hire more humans to go do that. And what I've realized is that now these tools, technologies are at a point where they can really help in automating some of this. It's important work, but in many ways, it's that repetitive drudgery, outreach, scheduling, follow-up, et cetera. And you've had bits and pieces, right? Like maybe your CRM has follow-up sequences or mail merges or things like that. But you figure all the different pieces that need to come together and looking at different systems. And I was like, let me see if I can really start using these tools to get up to speed and automating it. And there's a lot of communities out there that are pretty interesting. I started following a guy out there who has a handle of vibe marketing. Everyone's heard of vibe coding. And so there's a lot of YouTube channels and communities that are cropping up of folks learning how to do automated email campaigns or any of these other sort of marketing activities that you might expect. And so I started watching a lot of those videos, looking at, again, ways I could automate this process, and started dusting off some of those engineering chops and using some of these AI assistants as co-pilots to help me implement some of these workflows and some of these no-code, low-code tools. So that's the basic idea. And I laid out a lot there, so I'll see which direction is most interesting to you to pursue.
Well, I think what's interesting is because there's so much value in leveraging the different AI tools, but then how far can they go for you? So maybe you could share some successes of what was the use case and what worked, what did you do, how did it work, where didn't it go where you wanted to go, and maybe just share that. I think that's pretty
valuable. Yeah. I've got a bunch of really good lessons learned, even over the last month of doing this, that I think could help anybody going into this. So the first thing is, I previously had some help, a human assistant who was helping me with a lot of this podcasting process. And we had systematized what needed to be done from a human perspective into some pretty detailed SOPs or standing operating procedures. And this is key. For anyone going down this route, I think there's a really critical lesson learned, because you get really easy to fall into this shiny object syndrome when you're in this world of AI of, wouldn't it be cool if? Wouldn't it be cool if is way harder to implement, because you don't even know what good looks like or all of the pitfalls you're going to run into along the way, versus a process that your company has run hundreds, if not thousands of times manually, and you can document well. So that was key, is starting out with, I think we had a robust, like probably 20-page podcast process that we had documented with all the sort of if then, here's when, you know, when to follow up, how many times to follow up, here's preferences on when to schedule things or not schedule things, or what happens if they reschedule, all of those kind of corner cases. And then, so right, so then you got like a 20-page SOP. And one kind of cool tip, and I've been doing this a lot recently too, these AI copilots, whether it's Claude or ChatGPT or Gemini, pick your flavor, they all have strengths and weaknesses, which we could also talk about. These tools are actually really good at generating SOPs. So if you've had some back and forth and you have documents laying around, you're like, hey, can you generate an SOP that I can hand this off to a colleague for? That's a good place to start, right? You could almost think about, that's the baseline. If I was going to have a human run through this process, what I would want them to do. You almost think of that as like a feature spec for those who have been in engineering or product management. Then I took that, and one of the really cool things that I did was, I was just like, man, I think we all face this. I could go run down a blind alley for a while, not knowing if I'm just chasing a dream. Like, what is the possibility that this actually is feasible to automate? So one of the cool things is with these, like all the platforms, it started with Gemini, but now all the platforms have mimicked them, have come out with these deep research capabilities. Most platforms actually call it deep research. Some of them call it like deep search. I think Grok uses deep search. But anyway, they're really, versus the standard sort of quick question response that most LLM interfaces have, these deep research, you give it a more in-depth, like, hey, I need to know about XYZ, and it'll go off for 10, 20, 30 minutes in the background and go search through hundreds of websites, etc. So I basically took this 20-page SOP and I fed it into, I think it was OpenAI's deep research. All of them, again, have their strengths and weaknesses. And it was just like, hey, is this feasible? And it came back with this 20-page feasibility study that, equivalently, I would say, yeah, I've been an engineer. I've been an engineering manager. I've looked at a lot of product specs. This is something easily I could have paid an automation IT firm that does this for a living, $5,000-$10,000 to do this feasibility study. It came back with a ranking of, here's what's going to be difficult to automate. Here's what's going to be medium. Here's what's going to be dead simple. Here's different tools that you would use. It even created like an architectural diagram that I could use. Wow. Hey, you use like one of these orchestrators, like a Zapier or a N8N or Make, and then you have it connecting to your CRM and to Google Sheets. And it created a diagram to show this architectural flow. Then it created a sort of implementation plan. And one of the questions I asked Deep Research was, hey, as we go through this, focus me on what are the things I want to get to value as soon as possible. You don't want to gild the lily and cover every corner case, right? You want to try to get the 80% or 90% case through. But then also, you don't want to get halfway through this project to realize you're never going to be able to get to the full vision, because there's going to be all these areas that you really should evaluate first. So what are the biggest, like, how can we de-risk this the most? And it came back with all those answers. So I highly recommend anyone who's going down this path, again, starting with a process that your team or your company's run through hundreds, if not thousands of times, getting that into a, like, human, if I was to hand this off to a new hire today and say, you are now responsible for this process, here's your SOP for here, what this is and how we do it and how to think about it. And then feeding that into something like deep research when you're saying like, hey, okay, now I want to take this human process and automate it. How should I think about that? So I think those are really important tips. And then from there, I would say once I had those pieces, then I could take both of those, the human SOP and the feasibility study, and then feed those back as inputs to these AI co-pilots to say, okay, now let's refine a multi-step plan, right? So one of the tactical tips is, if anyone's used Claude 3.7 Sonnet, they'll know what I'm talking about. Sonnet just wants to code, man. It wants to just give you the answer. It wants to just develop an app for you right away. And I'm trying to describe it to somebody else. You ever see those videos where somebody puts like a rocket engine on a lawnmower or like one of those things? It's like that, where you're just like, hey, I'm thinking about building an app that like counts my calories. And all of a sudden you've got this whole, all these project files and code it's written. You're like, hold on, man, I haven't finished my thought yet. So you've really got to slow it down. And one of the ways to slow it down is be like, okay, I don't want you to write any code yet. These are the feasibility study. This is the process I'm trying to automate. Just help me create a simple phased step-by-step checklist that I can walk through. And so now I have these three different artifacts, and now I can start working down that checklist directly to build this out. So hopefully that structure could save a lot of people a lot of time, because if you dive right into the code, and I see this a lot in the Twitter sphere, people talking about vibe coding, you may find yourself in a corner that you didn't expect, but I found that those techniques can really help save you some effort and pain.
Yeah, I think it's really important when you said, I love that you start with a process you've done and you feed it to the AI, and then it's giving you a spec how to implement it, and then just get real focused. What will make it success to get a quick test, which is really good advice. Now, have you started the actual automation and are using AI to, I guess your end goal is to have an AI assistant that you've created through AI that can handle this process. Is that like
yes.
The end goal?
Yeah.
Are you at with all that? Where are you at now?
It's I'm not running a fully automated business. I've made, I would say, a valiant efforts at implementing the first thing I targeted at implementing, and it's running now in the background on a regular basis. There's so much more to be done. I will say a couple of things. For any of these things, I chose a platform called N8N. It's one of these low-code tools, really common ones out there people might also be familiar with. They're like Make or Zapier. There's any number. One of the reasons I went that direction was I started my career as an engineer at National Instruments, and we had the patent at National Instruments on the only visual programming language. It was called LabVIEW at the time. And this is, N8N is basically what LabVIEW should have been if it was still relevant in today's world. But it reminded me very much of my very first job at National Instruments with LabVIEW. So that's one of the reasons I really flocked to it. But I also didn't want to really deal with all of the details of deployment that you often have to, if you start going lower level, you've got to figure out, okay, I've got to go get a server or a host somewhere to put this thing. And so a lot of these platforms abstract all that away from you, so you can focus on just what you need. I would say the other thing is, like, it's very much crawl, walk, run. These systems, so the first system I implemented had to integrate between Google Sheets as a sort of hacky database, my email, my CRM, and I think those are the key points. So just in going through that world, there's going to be a lot of, you're going to have to start weeding through API documentation for some of these things. And so that might be new. And then one of the things I've been doing over the past several weeks is I have this thing running on a nightly basis to do some batch processing for me. You'll start running into things like, oh, this particular run exceeded your API query limit, right? And becoming familiar with things like that, right? So you want to get these things running in test mode and production, gradually scale them up so you can figure out along the way, like, the more you link in all these systems together, the more failure points you have. And hey, can it read these details from my CRM and figure out which are good, which are bad, write next steps as a baseline process to Google Sheets. Okay, I got that working. Now let me take that, instead of just writing it to Google Sheets, let me go and update the CRM with these messages I was just storing in some Google Sheet somewhere, et cetera, right? So building gradually on those processes.
So this use case is what, ensuring your guest shows up or getting guests or...
Yeah, what, so this is all in the, and I apologize, I went into the weeds without describing the overall part of it. So this is specifically around the whole guest recruitment process. So
the list in Google Sheets, you make an outreach. If you get a positive response, you're recording that in your CRM. And then this, you said 8NN, did I get that right? Is that a programming?
I'm not sure how they pronounce it, but it's N, the letter N, the number 8, the letter N, N8N.
Okay.
I've also heard it pronounced Nation as well, but I think it's just N8N.
And that's a vibe tool, a vibe coding tool?
It's one of these low-code visual programming tools.
Okay.
But
so if I could maybe, and you can vet this, but yeah, it where we're all at is it's a collaborator, but every step of the way, there's nuance and you have to like help get it through. And the more systems you chain together, the more unexpected outcomes you could have. So it's not, hey, AI, just go and use Google and use this CRM and recruit a whole bunch of guests for me and let me know what my next meeting is. We're far from that, right?
Oh, God, no.
Yeah, that's the promise, but we're so far from that.
Yeah, and I would say even I'm working step by step with this AI copilot of adding a sort of step at a time to my workflow. I'm literally been going between each of Claude, Gemini, and ChatGPT because they all have different nuances and they'll actually catch each other's mistakes. So if you're stuck troubleshooting an issue with one, giving the same issue to another one, it'll be like, oh, this code is all wrong. It'll be ChatGPT wrote in 03, wrote this code, and Gemini's, yeah, that code was never going to work for you because of XYZ. So switching between those is actually helpful. So yeah, that full end-to-end scope is definitely a pipe dream. I will also say that like being an engineer, I haven't touched production code in 18 years. So it would be very clear. And yeah, I never thought I would touch code again, but there definitely is a spidey sense I still have where there are suggestions that the AI will make that I'm like, that there's a lot of pain down that road. I could see why it's suggesting it, but I'm going to push back and suggest another direction. And I think this is where folks can run into a lot of problems. And you're seeing this even in the Twitter sphere as folks talk about sort of their vibe coding experiments. As soon as these code bases, someone vibe coded, get too big to fit into a single context window, and then they start running into issues, it almost becomes unmaintainable because they don't even know, they don't understand how all this works together versus now by building it this way, I at least have the knowledge of how the whole system fits together. And I worked piece by piece to build it. Look, I don't know what I'm all saying could be out of date in 6 weeks or that dream could come true. I just don't think it's there yet. And I think the other clarification that I would just make is in this workflow, there's a lot of hype out there around AI agents. What I'm talking about explicitly is AIs as a copilot to extend, enhance, give me better confidence in my capabilities to develop these systems where normally I may have had to hire an engineer to do it, which I think is incredible for businesses around the world who are just like, oh my God. It was like, similarly, when there were tools like Unbounce, et cetera, that came out with the ability for marketers to create landing pages, because before you used to have to go bug the web development team to get an engineer to write you HTML, just to write, hey, we want to test the new landing page design and we got a new promotion. And it's like, okay, no, actually now, or all the email development tools that allowed graphical user interface for all the marketers to create their own emails. You didn't need the engineer to hand code it. It's a similar sort of transition where now we are able to really apply that, I think, broadly to workflow automation writ large, where you're able to extend that. But I'm not putting an AI agent in the workflow making autonomous decisions that is running an N8N. Like you can do that. There's ways to call LLMs to do work for you in those systems, but I'm not even at that sort of point yet. It's just been, but it's been incredibly valuable even without that.
Yeah, I mean, we build a lot of enterprise systems here. And I could say that like your description of integrating with a lot of different APIs and subsystems, usually your dev team can get you there feature capability 40% of the dev effort. The last 60% is spent making it resilient and working, where, as you described. So it's like, if those that are vibe coding and running these things, just know that a lot of the work, maybe not the fun work, but the work to make sure things are working properly so that they can be autonomous or run your process is still there. And
yeah, so, like a fun issue there is I wrote a LinkedIn post about my whole experience that we're describing here a couple of weeks ago. And I used the JFK had the famous quote, "We do these things not because they are easy, but because they are hard." And the programmer's corollary to that is, "We do these things not because they're easy, but because we thought they were going to be easy." This was my experience. So originally when I'm talking about this process, it was like, oh, I'm going to go crank this out in an afternoon. This is gonna be, I got 4 hour block. I'm gonna crank it out. And I told my girlfriend, I was like, hey, I'm gonna show you a demo later today of this thing. And it was literally like 4 days later, and like big 4 days, like 16 hour days of just focus on this. I wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning. This is like the full thing on my mind before I can show her that demo. And one of the cases, to your point, that I ran into was I had the workflow working end to end for, say, one account in my CRM. So like one guest, you were a guest, so you would be an account. So it's like, hey, I want to send an outreach to Dean. It ran through that. I was like, all right, great. And I was like, now let me run through 10. And as it ran through 10, it got to number 6. And then the N8N instance had a memory crash and fell over because it used, I don't know, 8 gigs of RAM or something. Because I was querying like these databases, and all of a sudden, like, my reads weren't optimized. And so it was pulling way more information than needed. And so all of a sudden I ran out of space. Yeah. But these are the things that you run into, right? Or, hey, this particular query exceeded my default API read limits on Google Sheets API. So now I got to go figure out, how do I request a higher quota on that? Oh, I got to go hook my into a Google Cloud platform billing account and then go through the request process. And none of these things are insurmountable, but you don't, again, you want to see your way into them, right? Because they're going to be progressively, you're going to find these issues as you go along. But just know, if you run into it, you're not doing anything wrong. That's expected.
Yeah, no, it's a whole process to get it right. And it's interesting you're sharing that. Now, let me ask you a question about pricing. All of us SaaS companies, maybe you want to do freemium. Everyone wants to do monthly and annual. But oh my God, as a software company, you want to minimize churn. And you really always want to do annually. That's the ultimate. But do you have a point of view of monthly versus annual pricing?
Yeah, I generally agree with you. And even in B2B, yeah, I would even say a lot of companies want to go multi-year and won't even consider a monthly versus annual. I think there's probably two major dimensions. So the first is, does your product even make sense on a monthly? Because there's definitely products out there where the customer's time to value, even with a very motivated customer and implementation team, can't show value in a month. You think about a BI system that maybe needs to do some enhanced old school machine learning AI, where it's doing predictive analytics on your data. If I only have a week of data in the system in my BI tool, like, my predictive analytics, that is the whole value of the platform, isn't going to be very good yet. And so it doesn't make sense in that situation for me to have a monthly, because my time to value, to really show value, is probably longer than that month. And they're going to come up with a renewal decision before we've had a chance to really prove that value. So that'd be the first thing that I would look at. The second is, you're right. In general, it's better to lock your customers into a longer term commitment. And the way we think about that from an economics lens would be, you're paying for option value. Options have an accordant price. This is generally why, like, on a per hour basis, you're going to pay more for a freelancer than a full-time employee, because you're paying for the optionality, because that person, as soon as you're done with them for a project, is going to go hunt for a next job. But you had the ability to turn on and turn off somebody, like, on a dime. So that had option value. So you're willing to eat that. We have that situation all over. And so then this is usually why, for an annual, since we're getting the cash flow up front, we'll give like equivalent standard is about 17% discount for an annual, which equates to about 2 months free. But it's not necessarily the worst thing in the world to offer a monthly if it passes the first test I mentioned. There's a lot of times where I may be, as a business owner, looking at a new piece of software, and I'm just like, oh, I'm just not sure if it's going to work for me yet, so I'm willing to try out monthly. And in that case, it's not a, I think one thing, a helpful tip that folks may leave untouched or is not as nearly as standard practice as it should be, is there is a good sort of 60 to 90 day window after someone is on a monthly plan to actually have a campaign to reach out to them. Hey, like, we see you on a monthly, offering them an upgrade to an annual plan to lock them in. Because someone else described this to me as, it's kind of like the difference between going on dates versus being married. It takes a really bad situation for you to want to get a divorce, but you go on one bad date with somebody, you're like, I don't know. So you kind of have the same decision over and over again with the monthlies. Do I want to renew? It's kind of like dating someone. Like, you're having to make that decision on a month by month basis versus trying to get married. Be like, hey, like, we showed value. Let's look at something longer term here.
Yeah, I just see a lot of, I've been running our SaaS company and our software company for 35 years, and you read a lot of stories and they're like these, oh, that's it. That's all we have to do and we're going to be successful. And then the reality is, like, what you see out there, people writing stories about these go-to-market or these pricing models and everyone's doing it, it doesn't always equate to why they're successful. And so I just always put a caution out there, because everyone's doing it may not be a good reason. It's because everyone's doing it, or there might be a good reason. And until you really do it and experiment and see the effects and value around it, there's nothing easy. It just doesn't just work. At least that's what I found. Because we've had lots of monthly, annual, and you gave some good benefits. Why monthly? Why annual? Why multi-year? But I just caution that. It seems the same thing with even AI. Oh my God, so much productivity, amazing. But when you start to get into doing like some of the hard stuff, it's instead of 4 hours, it might be 40 hours, like you described.
Yeah. Yeah. With any of these tool systems, right, you look at them with a critical eye, and it's a good practice. If you have multiple subscriptions, to play them off against each other, be like, hey, my colleague gave me this advice. What's wrong with this advice? Because they all have their own sort of perspectives and way of looking at things. So you could sanity check them against each other. And then we've never been in a more interesting time to have access to some intelligence on demand in a way that, you know, and they don't get annoyed, right? You could keep on asking annoying questions and they never get tired of you.
You know, that's a good point. How the AIs can check each other and have different points of view and even different personalities. Like, I was shocked at Grok, how you could have it could be like really crazy and rude to you if you want it to be. You can now start to tune the personality of how it interacts with you, which is quite interesting. Have you experienced any of that? Or
I don't know when this will go live, but we recently had the problem with GPT 4.0 where it decided it was going to, I think the term of art was, glaze everyone by being incredibly sycophantic and telling them how amazing and wonderful and brilliant they were. And so I'm excited, but also I worry as I see that scenario play out, because there are times to be encouraging, and there are times, like any good friend, there are times to hold the line and ground some principles and say, maybe that's not such a good approach. You might second guess that. So we have to be aware of what may get us the most engagement and make us feel the best may not always be the best for us. Like we've learned with social media as maybe the first mega experiment with this type of technology.
Yeah, definitely. Now, Dan, if people want to get in touch with you or learn more, like how can they get in touch with you?
Happy to connect with folks on LinkedIn and trying to share my trials and tribulations as I fight through this. I'm not claiming I'm an expert in building these systems, but I'm an eager student trying to share that on LinkedIn. So Dan Balkowski. Also, folks who want to reach out through my website at producttranquility.com. And also, I have a podcast called SaaS Scaling Secrets. Check out Dean's episode in season 2. It was a rip-roaring good time. So definitely find that wherever podcasts are available.
Awesome. All right. Thank you so much for sharing your experience here, Dan, and appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Hey, it's Dean Guida here. Thank you so much for tuning in to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast, where we showcase the visionaries who are shaping the future with data and AI. If you're a successful leader, entrepreneur, or business professional and want to share your story on this program, we'd love to hear from you. Visit us at podcast.slingshotapp.io to apply. Got something value out of this interview? Share the love. Take a quick screenshot, post it to your favorite social platform, or text it to a friend. Don't forget to tag the show and use the hashtag AI Data Driven Leadership. I love seeing your posts and suggestions for future guests. And if you know someone who would make a great guest, let them know about the show. We're dropping new episodes regularly, so don't miss out. Hit subscribe wherever you listen, and if you enjoyed this episode, a quick thumbs up, rating, or review would mean the world to me and my team. Want to stay connected? Visit our website at podcast.slingshotapp.io or find me on LinkedIn at Dean Guida and Instagram at Dean Guida 89. Thanks again for listening to the AI Data-Driven Leadership Podcast. We'll see you next time.